Good morning. It's Easter weekend. This is Fritz Bergeron, bloodandfaith.com. I was perusing the news sites yesterday. Good Friday, perhaps the most historic day in the history of the world, other than the day of creation, or the day after the flood, or the day of the birth of Jesus Christ. But even then, the incarnation of God was very important. But close to that, it's the crucifixion of Jesus Christ who died on a cross for our sins. Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, nothing, zero on the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Nothing. Why? Remember, these are evangelists. The news outlets serve the purpose of evangelists. The movies, the culture, the music. They're evangelists. They tell you what's important. They grab your attention. They say, hey, pay attention to this. As far as they're concerned, Ukraine is more important than the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. As far as they're concerned, LGBTQ is more important than the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. In fact, anything, the latest swimsuit wear of some movie star is more important to them than the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Now, this is the opposite of a Christian nation. It's a godless, atheistic, secular religion that we live in. Make no mistake, it's a religion. It's a religion as much as any other religion out there. It's just not the truth. In our society, in Western society, we have reduced religion to a subset of thinking that supposedly has really no meaning or no relevance. It should have no meaning or no relevance in a scientific society. And yet I think as we are in 2022, we understand how non-scientific science is. Science has become it's a replacement for religion. And you heard that a lot in the last 2 years, the quote-unquote science behind the COVID vaccines. Trust the science, trust the science. No, you trust in God. You trust in Jesus Christ. Now we trust in science. Whole point of science is you don't have to trust in it. You can replicate these experiments over and over and over again. You always get the same result. But now you trust in science and you trust in the scientists. That's a religion. And I've long said here at bloodandfaith.com that are your university professors, the natural scientists, the social scientists, they've become your prophets. They become the prophets and the high priests of your religion. So get over this idea that you're going to live in a religiously neutral country, whether it's the United States or Germany or Great Britain or Australia. No, that's not true. Your evangelists are telling you what your religion is. And your religion is the swimsuits of the movie stars, a war in Ukraine. Pay attention to these things, they say. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ is irrelevant. The resurrection of Jesus Christ will be irrelevant on Sunday morning for them. The best they'll do is have a multi-religious article or op-ed piece saying, oh, isn't this so wonderful? These cute little people wandering around with their, doing their little religious things, as if it's as interesting as the kind of topping you put on your ice cream. Yet they set the tone and they set the stage for what is real and what is not real in a society. Let me give you two more examples of that. See if I can pull this up. All right, here's an example of that. So you've got MSNBC. They are having a fit because Elon Musk might buy Twitter, and if he buys Twitter, he might change the censorship rules that Twitter has, and they're having a meltdown, having an utter meltdown about it. And you know what they say? They said, look, that's not his job. That's our job to determine what people think. I'll give you a quote. This is from MSNBC's Morning Joe Mika Brzezinski. The dangerous edges here are that he is trying to undermine the media. See, these are religious figures. She perceives herself as a religious figure. And Elon Musk is a threat to the orthodoxy of her religion. So he's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts. She believes she's the only one that can make up the facts. Again, this is a religious system. And it could be that while unemployment and the economy worsen, he could have undermined the messaging so much that he can actually control what people think. Her position is, that's her job. And then the nail in the oops of I just told the truth confidence. She says, quote unquote, and that is our job. Okay? He can actually control what people think, and that is our job. So there's Mika Brzezinski, MSNBC. It's open. It's open. They're a religious cult. And she says very clearly, it's our job to determine what people think. Joe Scarborough replies, yep, that's right. So we're in a battle of orthodoxy of this secular atheistic religion. Mainstream media says, hey, we are the protectors of the truth. We determine what truth is. And how dare somebody come and challenge the narrative that we create? It's our job to control what people think. It's open. And I want the church to recognize this, because the church has been so scared of getting out of the narrow confines of the, what the world would permit them, that they're no good. They're no good anymore. We just did a Good Friday podcast last night, and Jesus Christ was accused of insurrection, of leading the people astray and inciting insurrection. Go read it. Go listen to my podcast from last night. And the church is like, oh, we don't want to be accused of that. The church does not want to be accused of the same thing that Jesus Christ was accused of. At the same time, while they're coming out accusing Jesus Christ of these things, they demanded that the real insurrectionist, Barabbas, be let go. Is that not a perfect reflection of what's going on in America in the last couple of years? You got a few people who really were harmless and didn't do anything, accused of insurrection, while the real insurrectionist, Antifa BLM, burnt down cities, set up autonomous zones, and they're not accused of anything. And the people like Vice President Kamala Harris actively worked to get them bailed out when they weren't arrested. All right, let me give you another example of that. This is Nancy Pelosi. Now, many times I've said on the show, when you hear the word democracy, do not think that that when they use that term, it does not mean that you have a say in how you're governed. In my mind, that's what it means. Democracy, hey, the people have a vote. People get to vote. People get to decide what laws they're going to live under and who their rulers are going to be. It doesn't mean that to them. When they say democracy, they're talking about the political ends, the end result that they want. Abortion on demand, LGBTQ jammed down our children's throats, the hatred of white people taught in the public schools. To them, that's what democracy means. Has nothing to do with the will of the people. So here's Nancy Pelosi. She's asked, look, she was asked by somebody, and she was asked, look, the 2022 elections don't look very good. What do you think is going to happen this fall? And Pelosi says, I don't have any intention of the Democrats losing. It's absolutely essential for our democracy that we win. Absolutely essential for our democracy that I win. Okay, so right there. In other words, what she's saying is, even if all the people vote for Republicans, that's not democracy. Only they represent democracy. Only the Democrats represent democracy. I fear for a democracy if the Republicans ever get to the gavel. We can't let that happen. Democracy is on the ballot in November. Okay, so this is what I'm saying. This is exactly what I'm saying. Nancy Pelosi backs up Fritz Bergen. How about that? She backs me up. She said, look, if all the people vote Republican, that's going to be the death knell for democracy. When they say democracy, they do not mean the will of the people. They mean the end goals that they want. Equity, inclusion, racial diversity, but certainly not ideological diversity, LGBTQ, CRT. For them, that's what democracy means. And if you vote against it, oh my God, you have become the equivalent of a capitalist imperialist stooge to the communists of 100 years ago. So we're in essentially a Marxist rebellion, although we don't use that term anymore. They don't use that term anymore because it's gone out of fashion and people, it's been a tainted term. So they've rebranded. You've noticed how I've talked about the rebranding of Jesus Christ, the dumbing down of Jesus Christ, the stripping of Jesus Christ of the uncomfortable facts about his nature and his character. Stay in the closet, Jesus, says the evangelical church to Jesus Christ. Don't come out. We got this. We're going to remarket you. We're going to rebrand you. The kindler, gentler Jesus. Well, they've done the same thing with Marxism. You don't call it Marxism. You call it democracy. You don't call it the dictatorship of the proletariat. You call it democracy. And the will of the people is really not the will of the people. It's the will of whoever runs the party. You're in a cult. We live in a cult. The cult leaders, the religious leaders, have seized control. God forbid you speak against them. You become unorthodox. You become a disbeliever, a violator of their faith, a violator of their religion. And you need the ultimate sanction. I need the ultimate sanction, according to them. And they're doing the best they can to sanction me because I dare think outside their narrative. And even worse than that, I dare give voice to my thoughts. That's what's going on. And my biggest, the organization that I criticize the most is the evangelical church. It's the church. It's the Church of Jesus Christ. Where are you, church? Wake up. This is the existential battle. Church wants to be the gray man. You know, I mentioned about how individuals want to be the gray man. The church wants to be the gray man. Oh, we just want to hunker down and slide around and not be noticed so we can keep holding our services. And your services aren't doing any good. I'm just going to flat out say that. All the church services in America for the last 100 years haven't done a darn's worth of good. Look at where we've gone as a culture. Yeah, this is on the church, man. I'm telling you, this is on the church. This is not on God. This is not on the devil. This is on the church. The church has to change. You're not going to get the sinners to change. But Jesus Christ said, look, all authority has been given to me on heaven and earth. Therefore, you go and disciple the nations. You go and disciple the nations. Don't look at me. You go and bring discipline to the nations. Teach them everything that I've taught you from Genesis through the Revelation. The purpose is Christian nations on earth. And as we've covered before, it doesn't mean every nation is going to be the same. It doesn't mean the expression of Christianity will be the same in every nation any more than it is in any two individuals or any two churches or any two denominations. That's the glory of it. The Almighty preserves the diversity. But it's a diversity in truth. It's a diversity in liberty. It's a diversity in Jesus Christ. Ethnic diversity, linguistic diversity, cultural diversity, diversity of values and the way they live their daily lives. It'll all be there. The people that want to destroy diversity are the people that run the cult. That's why they want to jam everybody in urban areas. Pour in some bleach, hit that blend button on the blender, make everybody exactly the same. There's no male, there's no more female. There's not just two genders. Oh, there's no such thing as race, except when they want there to be race. Interesting that the Pharisees of 2,000 years ago have not gone away. The hypocrisy of 2,000 years ago has not gone away. The Gospels are forever. There are eternal principles in the Gospel. And many people, including Christians, read it as if it was a historical summary of something that happened 2,000 years ago. Principles have not changed. I've written extensively on that at bloodandfaith.com. Extensively. Keep that in mind, all right? The church has to change the culture. We're responsible for it. We need to build Christian nations. We've reduced everything so that we're not offensive to the world, and we end up where we're ended up. No wonder. Now, what's my role? What's Fritz Bergen's role? Well, if you take what I'm saying just in this own podcast, and I've discussed how the media become the evangelists, maybe having a podcast is like being an evangelist. Maybe that's what that is. Or is it like being a teacher? Where are you in this? What's your role in this? Do you have a podcast? Do you have a blog? Do you send out emails? One of my favorite guys in the whole world, his name's David. This goes back 20, 30 years. This was pre-internet. This was pre-internet. He used to hand out tracts everywhere he went. The tract man. Everywhere he went, he'd go through the turnpike and give money. This was back before they had all the transponders and stuff. Give money to pay to drive up and down the turnpike in Florida. He'd give them, you know, a $5 bill and a tract. He was the tract man. We all need to be the tract man, whether it's by email, by Twitter, by Facebook, by tweet. We need to overwhelm them, a billion buzzing bees, and change the culture, change the thought. Why is it that I can go to all the major news sites on Good Friday and there's not a single article about the crucifixion of Jesus Christ? Finally, I go to Fox. I scroll way, way, way down at the bottom, and there's a little tiny, you know, two-point headline saying, here's an opinion piece on Good Friday. It's like, that's it? That's the best you can give me? All I want to say about Fox News is when you hire a he, she, a transgender, that's all you got to know about them. Why do you think they hire people like that? To be evangelists. That's why, to be evangelists. All right. Break on that. How about this war? How about this war in the Ukraine? How about this war in Europe? What do you think is going to happen there? I don't know. I'm looking at this the bombing of the Moskva. Or was it an explosion? We don't know. We don't know. A couple thoughts on that. One is if the Ukrainians hit it with missiles, I think there's going to be payback. Number two, what does the fact that you can take out a $500 million ship with a couple of missiles say about the future of large naval vessels? What does that say about that? Are they viable? I think it's a question worth asking. Naval analysts have looked at this for decades and decades now. And it goes all the way back to the Second World War, really. In the First World War, the battleships were the queens of the ocean, the kings of the ocean. And then in World War II, they were worthless. They were good for nothing because naval aviation could take them out. And so nobody built battleships after World War II. Everybody's on aircraft carriers. Well, what happens if, any mid-tier country can build or buy missiles that can take out a ship like the Moskva, which means Moscow? What does that mean for the future of surface warfare? I don't know, but I think it's something worth contemplating. Same thing with land warfare. You've got these $100 million tanks roaming the countryside, and you get every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there with these little javelin missiles, and they're taking out tanks right and left. What does that mean for the future of tank warfare? I don't know. What's going to be the future of satellites if everybody gets the technology to take satellites out of the atmosphere? Interesting. Things go big and then things go small again. Let alone what happens when the first EMP gets set off in the atmosphere and there goes 50% of all the satellites up there. There's no more GPS or we could have a fun time, man. It could be really interesting out there. End of banking as we know it. Everything. Again, you know, I go back to Psalm chapter 2, that the world can do what it wants, that the nations of the world can do what they want, and the Lord sits in heavens at last. And he warns the kings, do homage to the Son. Right there, Psalm chapter 2, do homage to the Son. Bow down and worship the Son. Worship Jesus Christ. We're going to build Christian nations. Get that in your heart. Get that in your vision. Let that come out of the mouths of the preachers and pastors across the face of the earth. Let these bones live. Let the historically Christian peoples resurrect that we may serve Jesus Christ once again as our ancestors did. As our ancestors did. Let us not apologize. Let us not back down. Let us not wait for their permission. They're going to have a totalitarian. They've got a totalitarian government. And the church, the fact that the church thinks it can get by with where we're at, it says everything you need to know. They've already submitted. They've already said, you know what, you just tell us, you know, our left to right boundaries and we'll stay within them. Just like the church in China. If you want to have an official sanctioned church, you got to have a Communist Party member that's your pastor. Oh, you want to have a church? No problem. Okay, just make sure you submit your pastor's name to us. We'll see if he's on the books. Oh, yeah, no, he's good. He's a good pastor. Same in D.C. You look down here in D.C., you see all these churches out there. Every single one of them has the Communist Party logo out in the front of their church. It's got two of them. One, it's the BLM, and two, it's the homosexual flag. Stamped approved, party approved, approved by the left, approved by the Marxist, approved by the Communist. Here's the homosexual flag, the rainbow flag. Here's the BLM sticker. And they're safe. And they think that's fine. And I'm afraid that same spirit is affecting much of the evangelical church, because where are they? Where are they in the fight? Oh, Romans 13, obey godly authority. I hope last night when we did the podcast on the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, you realize that he was accused of insurrection and fake news. He stirs up trouble everywhere, starting in Galilee all the way down into Judea. He declares that there's a different king. He claims that he's a king themselves. He stirs up trouble with the people. How come the church isn't accused of that anymore? Oh, they're racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, queerphobic, intolerant, divisive, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic. Church is terrified of those fake words, those false accusations. Church, who's the accuser of the brethren? It's Satan himself. Who accused Jesus Christ before Pilate, before Herod, before the Sanhedrin? The Pharisees, Sadducees, the chief priests, accuse. Imagine that. The only sinless man on the planet, you accuse him right and left. But the church is terrified of being accused of sins that are no sins. We got to get over that. We got to get over that stuff. And I'll keep hitting on that. But how many females did Jesus Christ appoint as apostles? Exactly zero. Oh, Jesus is a sexist. How many people did Jesus Christ appoint as apostles that were African American? Exactly zero. Oh, Jesus Christ is a racist. How many homosexuals did he appoint? Oh, he's homophobic. How many Jews did he appoint? Uh-oh. He appointed one. Jesus Christ appointed one Jew. His name was Judas Iscariot. The rest were Galileans. And on down the list, how many Muslims did he appoint? Islam didn't exist in 2,000 years ago. Everybody knows that. All right, but my point is this. Why are you afraid of things that Jesus Christ wasn't afraid of? Why are you afraid of being accused of sins that aren't sins at all? We want a diverse and tolerant and inclusive congregation. Why? Why? It's because, not because you want to honor Jesus Christ, it's because you're afraid of the accuser of the brethren. You're afraid of the accuser. You're afraid you're going to get accused of sins that are no sins at all. Jesus Christ was hated. They hated him. Why do you think they killed him? And he was a threat to the political order. And that went on for centuries. Not just to the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees and the chief priests, but even in Rome. Christians said, we're not burning any incense to Caesar. Okay, you go into the Colosseum. You will have you eaten by lions. And we'll turn you into Roman candles. Same with Daniel, Shadrach, and Meshach, 500-600 years before the time of Christ. They were good government bureaucrats. They're great government bureaucrats. They said, listen, we just got one little rule, Daniel, for 30 days, just 30 days, just take a break from your prayers. That's all. That's it. You can pray quietly to yourself. You can pray, Daniel, just between your ears. Don't have your lips move. Daniel goes into his house, opens up the windows, bends down, and prays out loud to his God. Daniel, couldn't you just have toned it down for, you know, how about use a little wisdom, Daniel? Couldn't you have used just a little wisdom? Can you know, forget you guys. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Hey, man, you can worship your God. Worship your God all you want. Just today, for the next 15 minutes, when the band starts playing, just go through the motions. You know, you got a great position. You've got all kinds of influence that you can use for good, for God's kingdom. Don't blow it. Just don't be full of pride and arrogance. Just bend down and bound down and at the obelisk. They said, oh, heck no. Oh, no, we're not doing that. 99% of the church will bow down. Oh, we'll just bow down. Just this one little thing. And then we can continue our good work. 99% of them will say, okay, we'll just pray between our ears. And our lips won't move for the next 30 days only. And then we can have church services again because the COVID quarantines will be over by then. Church won't do it. The church won't do it. What good are the church? And that's the evangelical church that supposedly, you know, believes in the Bible. We're not talking the Washington, D.C. mainline churches from that really were, remember these churches 100 years ago, 200 years ago, that it was the center of the Second Great Awakening. Some of these churches, Methodist churches, these great Protestant mainline denominations, the center of the Great Awakening, First and Second Great Awakenings. And now look at them. Is this what's going on with the evangelical church in the West today? Well, you know, we're just going to beat some drums and strum a guitar and, you know, everything's good. Jesus is coming back tomorrow. Well, you know what? How are you any different than these mainline churches were 100 years ago or 50 years ago or 200 years ago? You're on the same track. You're in the same course. Well, but we believe in blah, 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 blah. Listen, you're on the same course. We need a big wake-up call. I think we're getting it. I think there's a lot of Christians that are getting it. I think it's bypassing most of the church leadership. Not entirely. But, you know, I don't see a whole lot of preachers out there getting arrested. I don't know one preacher that was arrested on January 6th. I don't know. I mean, what do I know? I wasn't there. I was on a different continent on January 6th. I'm just saying, where's the church in this mix-up? Where's the church in this mess? They're good little Roman 13 churches, aren't they? We're going to obey authority. We're not going to get involved in politics. Hey, I got good news. God understands our condition. So he's going to fix it. You know how he fixes it? Heat and pressure. And there will be a group of us that say, we're not going there. There's a group of us that will say, we're not going there. And it goes all the way back to read Judges 3, 4, and 5. It was the same thing. Israel is under bondage because they left the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is Jesus Christ. So God said, okay, I'll sell you out. I'll sell you into slavery to these pagan nations, which has happened in the United States, all the nations of Christendom. And you got half the church saying, well, this is okay. This is fine. We're fine. There's that meme out there. That some little goofy guy sitting in a room and flame starts in the corner. Next thing you know, the whole room's in fire, and he keeps saying, it's fine. It's okay. It's okay. Reminds me of the church today. But eventually the prophetess, Deborah, stood up and said, hey, it's time to fight back. It's time to fight back. Barak, gather the troops. Go fight against Sisera. And of course, he's terrified. He said, we can't fight these guys. They got 900 iron chariots. There's no way. This is not possible. She says, listen, this is what you need to do. And she says, well, I ain't going unless you go. She says, okay, fine, I'll go. But the honor will not be yours. Honor's going to go to a woman. And they do, and they did. But in that struggle, many, many, many of the sons of Israel said, we're not fighting this fight. We're not going to do it. And the angel of the Lord cursed the inhabitants of Maris because they wouldn't. They cursed them because they wouldn't show up in a time of battle. But many of them did, and they're blessed. So we're going there whether we want to go there or not. Kicking and screaming, we're going there. So as this world enters in this, it's a great time of change, dangerous time, risky time. But as we emerge from the other end of it, we're going to have to rebuild our countries. We're going to have to rebuild our civilization. We need to rebuild explicitly Christian nations explicitly. Line 1, Article 1, Paragraph 1, Sentence 1 of whatever founding documents you have. Jesus Christ is Lord. Jesus Christ is the monarch of our civilization, of our culture, of our race, of our ethnicity, of our nation. I don't care if you're Salvadoran, Rwandan, I don't care. Jesus Christ is Lord. Explicitly. This is ground zero, baby. This is the requirement. None of this we're going to get along in a neutral environment, because if that's your attitude, you'll be extinguished from the face of the earth. And worse yet, that's not even the worst thing. The worst thing is who's going to preach the gospel? Answer is nobody, because you won't be around because you were afraid to stand up and say no. That's the truth. Unless we stand up and say we're not going this way, who's going to preach the gospel to the next generation and the next generation after that? And all these churches say, oh, there's not going to be another generation because we're going to get raptured. And they've been saying that and saying that and saying that. Back in the 80s, the big thing was, oh, Jesus is coming back in 1988. It's 40 years, one generation after the founding of the State of Israel. Well, guess what? We're almost another 40 years beyond 1988. And they're all saying the same thing. Oh, and so they absolve themselves of any responsibility to build Christian nations, to build a Christian culture. And by doing that, you damn the next generation to hell because there's nobody there to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Mr. Evangelical. Fritz Bergeron, happy Easter weekend. BloodandFaith.com.